It's time now for the Prescott Palette with your host, Barry Barb. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
The Prescott Palette Scholarship, provided by Elgato Azul and Gato Community Gives, is available to full and part-time students pursuing an education in culinary, visual, performing arts, and education. Scholarships up to $5,000 will be awarded for the second year. Applications can be found online at elgatoazulprescott.com/scholarships. The application deadline has been extended to April 30th. Only applications mailed to the address indicated will be accepted. For more information, the Prescott Palette Scholarship at elgatoazulprescott.com/scholarships.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want, with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
Here's a shout-out to my good friend Rukini and her crew of Allen's Flowers and More, where they've been creating beauty and delivering happiness since 1914. Located at 1095 East Gurley Street in Prescott, Allen's is your one-stop shop for all your floral and gift needs for any occasion. Weddings, anniversaries, birthdays, or to send a pick-you-up bouquet. Allen's features a wide selection of unique gifts, cards, truffles, as well as convenience of a drive-through pickup window and flower happy hour. Allen's Flowers and More, 1095 East Gurley, 445-5131, or on the web at allensflowers.com. Welcome to the Prescott Palette, where we're going behind Prescott's culinary, visual, and performing arts, and everything in between. My guest today is the lovely Mr. Brad Fain. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
So what exactly is your position with the Fain Signature Group? Are you, who are you?
I'm just one of the family members.
One of the family members?
I guess my official role would be the president of the development side of the business, running all our development operations.
Okay.
And also the least likely person to be on your radio show.
I know.
I listened to your intro there, and I'm like,
oh, no.
Oh, I'm way out of my leg. This is culinary palette. I'm like,
no, this is fun because we're flipping seats because I did your podcast about 3 years ago.
You did.
When we introduced my involvement with your project out there in Prescott Valley Legato.
Yeah.
And two things I want to say first. One, I think it's funny that you said you're one of the family members because I think that speaks volumes about you and your family itself. And I'll say that, and something I want to tell you personally and publicly is that since our involvement in this project about 4 years ago, we've all been involved in certain multitudes of business relationships over the years. And I have to admit that the last 4 years working with you guys has really been an eye-opener and a teaching mechanism for me as far as how you and your family exemplify leadership and compassion and respect. And I think that's something that I know I personally have grown from and says volumes about you, your family, your dad, your upbringing, things like that. And when I got the call last Monday from Anessa about the fire taking place, mm-hmm. at first my thought was, well, that kind of sucks. You know, they're disappointed about all the work we put into something. But the bigger loss to me really, after I thought about it, really was the relationship that we've established and that I appreciate so much. And I think that that's something that a lot of people that work with you, when I talk to them, it resonates and they say the same thing. So hats off to you and your family. So thank you.
Well, thank you. No, those are very kind words. Thank you very much. And it really comes from our father. I mean, he built this. He built the mantra, the attitude in our office about it's about the community. It's about others. We're just a conduit. I mean, we have land, but it's people like you making an investment in Prescott Valley that make it great. It's all the businesses you look around. That's what makes it great. It's all the people that come and contribute their handprint to the community, whether you buy a home and live there and that's all you do and you enjoy the life, or whether you're bringing your business and your employees there and you're contributing that way. I mean, it is about the people, and that's kind of always been our attitude, is let's just kind of step out of the way and let the people who do what they do best do it and not try to tell them how to do it or interfere with it.
So I want to go, obviously we're going to talk a little bit about last Monday, and as devastating as that situation was, I think you and I both have recognized that out of that devastation becomes the recognition of community and leadership and the things that have been built over the years. And your family has been in the area since the late 1800s, am I correct?
1874 in the Verde Valley.
Okay, so for those who are listening who may not know the Fane story, in a nutshell, which I know is impossible to do in a very short period of time because it's not the longest program in the world, and we don't make it any longer than it is, tell us a little about the history of your family and how you all came about and their different roles in the development of Prescott Valley.
Yeah, so 1874, great-great-grandfather was a 49er, going from the Midwest to the West Coast, searching for gold, minerals. On one of his treks back, he had met his wife in California, and back in those days, you traveled in terms of weeks and months and years and not days.
Right.
They were going through Nevada, and they stopped at Fort Verde, and they just never left, and that's where it started. So he was a hoe grass farmer and started growing grass for the fort, for the horses.
What's a hoe grass?
That's a type of grass.
Oh, type of grass. Oh, you go to
so,
I don't know what hoe grass is.
Don't go there, Barry.
I'm not going to go.
So he was a farmer. And
okay,
so
okay.
It all started with the land there. And then his fifth child was my great-grandfather, Dan Fane, and he was a rancher. And that's kind of where the ranching side started. And he got his foothold in the Verde. And then later in life, he in 1917 bought the Rafter 11 Ranch.
Okay.
And that is the ranch that surrounds Prescott Valley, and that's our legacy ranch that we have and operate today.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where we are. And then my grandfather was also a green thumb farmer. He farmed all over the state in, you know, different kinds of crops, was partners with people, and he was also a senator. He was back in the Barry Goldwater era.
Okay.
They were mates down at the in the Senate.
Okay.
So he was part of that era, and he was very much a, you go down there for my two terms, I give my service to my state and my community, and then I return back to the ranks and work.
Okay.
Not a lifetime politician by any means. And then my dad was the one who really saw the vision for development. And he loved ranching. His passion was ranching, but he saw there's an easier way to, you know, put shoes on my kids and feed them and clothe them and get them off to an education. And so he's the one who really started the development.
Right.
And then so that was like 65 years ago.
So when you growing up, because you have obviously you have a very unique perspective in having the fact that you had basically a front row seat, a seat at the table from a very young age, your whole life, watching this community develop. When you look back on it, what were the things that you really draw from that create your decision making today?
First and foremost, think in terms of generations. My dad instilled that in us and is like, it's not a decision about today and what's best for today so we can grab the most or reap the most benefits. It's about what's good for the community over the long run.
Okay.
You know, we have a private business.
Right.
But our business is conducted in a public space. We have to go to the town council for zoning, and we have to get approvals, and there's a lot of input from the community. So it's a very public process, even though it's a private business. And he always had a decision-making process of what will be good for the community in the long run will always be good for us. If the community thrives, we thrive. If the community suffers, we suffer.
Right.
And so that's probably the number one takeaway is to kind of think, you know, we talk about it in the office all the time. Ron and I are like, you know, what are our kids or grandkids going to have when we leave? And we're thinking about, like, there's no build the company up and sell it someday for retirement and we fade off into the sunset. It's like hand it to the next generation.
Okay.
And so it's a handoff. And so it's that really separates us from other developers. We don't like to call ourselves a developer. We like to say we're a community builder.
Okay.
But that separates us from them because they're in it like they've got requirements. They got to get to a profit. They got to do something in a period of time. And we can be like, we'll start it. And if we can't finish it, the guys behind us will finish it.
Right.
And it's just a totally different perspective.
It's a really interesting way of looking at not just doing business, but living your lives.
Yeah.
You know, and so often, especially when you look at the world economically, there are individuals who are successful in their own right, and they're individuals. They're not really building like you're doing, building community or building. There's not a lesson being learned from what they're doing, I believe. And so I think, you know, it's amazing to me that you guys do this and continue to do it. So
well,
when
thank
you,
you for that. Appreciate
my
it.
Pleasure.
That's a kudos to the whole family because it really is a family way of thinking. When we have our board meetings, the board is the family, and they're all aligned in that kind of thinking.
Well, it's really funny you said board because I know your daughter, your sister, Dawn.
Yeah. How old do I look this morning?
I'm bad? Sorry. I know. We have this
radio. I know I have a good radio face, but come on.
We've had this conversation before. But anyways, so Dawn, she's been on my show, by the way, and she did a lovely job.
Okay. And I know. The pressure's on.
The pressure's on.
All right.
But, whenever I meet anybody in your family, you all carry that same, it's that humble, like, I don't know what I would say it is, but it permeates through the whole family. It says a lot about your parents and your upbringing and stuff like that. And so when she told me you guys have actually family board meetings, I'm like, what? You have family board meetings? So you all have a board meeting. How involved is each member as far as I go? Are you all like involved in this or how does this work?
So everybody's on the board. So
okay.
The board is today, it's my mom as the chair. And then the four.
She's a lovely lady, by the way.
She is,
Nancy,
and she's
hello.
An amazing chairwoman.
Okay.
She runs a great meeting and keeps it just low key, and she doesn't give herself enough credit. She's always like, I'm unprepared, I'm not ready, and I'm like, you do an amazing job.
Right.
And she really does. And then my brothers and sisters, so four of us. So there's a total of five of us on the board, and Ron and I are in the business and on the board, and then my sister Dawn and my other brother Norm. They're on the board. And so we meet quarterly.
Right.
And we talk business and where we're headed, and they ask us questions just to kind of check in on us and make sure we're not getting caught, the trees in the forest. We're in the forest, and do we see the big picture?
Right.
And then once a year, we get the whole family together. So all my nieces and nephews, and we actually have the sixth generation is starting to perk up now. So
yeah.
We've got two members of the sixth generation. And we get together, and we have a little bit of a family meeting
right.
to let them know what they're a part of so that we can kind of start that knowledge transfer and history transfer.
Right.
And then we try to have a lot of fun.
And see, I think that's really important for people to realize, because I think a lot of people that live in Prescott or Prescott Valley drive through Prescott Valley. They see Fane Road. They see Fane. They don't really know who Fane. I don't think they understand that it is a family.
Yeah.
And they're members of the community.
Like everybody else.
So let's touch a little bit on last Monday.
Okay.
April Fool's Day.
Horrible day.
Horrible day.
Couldn't be worse. April Fool's and that.
Yes. It couldn't have been worse on so many levels. And like I said earlier, I think that, and I'm sure you feel the same way, that out of that devastation and out of that situation, you saw the best of the community and the surrounding area come together. So what are some of your takeaways from that day?
Well, shock for sure.
Yeah.
Still probably in a little bit of shock. And we're kind of dealing with some days are high emotions, some days are low emotions, some days there's a hug needed in the office, some days there's a few tears. But everybody in the office, it's about attitude. And our attitude today is we're a go till we're a no. We got to figure out how to rebuild it and figure it out. And we don't know what we don't know. We've never been here.
Right.
And what we saw that night was, as I was driving to it and got the call in the middle of the night, this huge glow. And I was just like, oh, crap. I mean, I'm miles away, and I can see a glow, and I'm like, this...
Not good.
This is a really big fire. This is not good. So you get there, and the whole thing is just engulfed, and, I walk up, and I talk to the fire chief, and he's just sitting there. He's like, we're just protecting the community at this point. As soon as they arrived on site, so they got the call. They told me about 110, 112, somewhere in there, and they were on site, within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
They said the first engine that arrived was this is a loss. It was that big, that fast.
Wow.
And so they immediately jumped into action about protecting the surrounding buildings. Our office was on the south side. There's Homestead on the east side.
Correct.
And they were worried about where the embers were going. And I just have to say, thank goodness for the weekend of rain and snow.
Yeah.
Everything was wet, which probably, if it had been a dry April and a dry March,
right,
that thing could have been devastating across the community like we wouldn't even imagine.
Right.
But what we saw that night was a group of men and women that were focused on the situation. They were trying to protect the community, and they did an amazing job. And they had this network. And I don't think people realize it. We're a small – CAFMA's small.
Right.
I mean, they're big in one respect, but they're small. And then Prescott Fire is small as well. But they collaborate. And over the years, the chief has invited me in when he hires new – chiefs and different people, they bring in the community to help interview. So I've got to see this process a little bit because I've been on those interviews of how he's collaborating and who's in the room. Community members interviewing. The chief of police is in the room interviewing. The chief from Prescott Fire is interviewing. They're building this network. And so that night, all of this came together. We had Cottonwood, Camp Verde, Sedona, and Flagstaff all in our community helping us, because it took every engine from Prescott and CAFMA to be on our site. And so there was no other availability if there was another emergency, and there were many. But they had all these other engines helping them. And so we got to operate much bigger than we were, and we can kind of stay small. And that to me was leadership. That was leadership from years ago when they said, what are we going to do if there's ever a big incident? We're not going to be able to handle it. So they started putting those relationships together and those partnerships together so that when they were in that scene that night, it was a phone call. And all of a sudden, all these other resources are there, and they had fire trucks putting water on Homestead, just keeping it wet.
Right.
So make sure nothing happened to that. That was devastating. And then later that morning, we went to what they call their CARTA meeting, which is where they're all in an incident room, like, here's the next 24 hours. And the display of leadership in that room was amazing. And they looked at us, and they're like, what do you need? And I'm like, what do I need?
Yeah.
What do you need?
Right.
And they're like, hey, we're here because we love the community. We want to protect it, and we want to help you. And that was just like, you don't see that very often in our community. You almost think it's lost. We kind of see the public side of leadership, and there's all these attitudes, and I'm right, you're wrong. If you don't agree with me, the heck with you, all that kind of stuff. But this group of men and women in the first responder world, they still have that passion for our community, and it was, we're here to protect our community. We're here to serve our community. And to doing so, we're a better community for it. And that was what I saw was years in the work, great leadership on display that night, which kept our entire community safe. No loss of life, not one injury from the first responders.
Wow.
And no injuries that we know of elsewhere. Pretty amazing if you think about the devastation of that and how tight it is in there.
Right, right, right. You know, and I think it says a lot again about, like you said, the history of building community, building these relationships. It's not something that happens over a cup of coffee or a weekend or a week or a month. So do you have one standout from that night that or that day that, you know, you mentioned earlier you had a story. Did you want to share that? Or?
Well, that was a little bit of the story of just the firemen and the firewomen in that room looking at us saying, what do you need?
Right.
We're thinking, what do you need? We got video. We got different things that we can provide to you. And they're like, no. What do you need?
So,
and that compassion, that just that kind of turning the chair a little bit in the room. And it was just a great display of compassionate leadership. They're the leaders in the room. I don't know what to do in a fire.
Right.
I don't know what to do in an investigation.
Right.
But they're leading it, but they're also being compassionate. So I would take that away because what I saw there, I don't see in our public leadership.
Right.
There's so much divisiveness. And I don't want to, I'm not poking at anybody. I'm just saying at the national level, at the state level, at our local level, it's you're wrong, I'm right. And there's all these fights and all it does is create divisiveness. And you go on social media and it's divisiveness again. But I think it stems from leadership. If our leaders could calm the room, it's not that the social media is going to go away, but maybe it calms down.
Right.
And we don't have this divisive community, and it shouldn't take a fire like that or an incident like that to bring us together.
Right.
The outreach of the community has been overwhelming, so humbling to see people pouring in and here's a note, here's a this, anything we can do. I don't know anything about what you do, but I'm here to help. Just I'll go sweep a sidewalk, anything.
Right.
But to see that rally of the community and like, why does it take this event? Why can't we have that. It's in our community. We just have to bring it out.
So you have to feel that this really confirms your dad's vision of what he was trying to create as far as when you talk about community and Prescott Valley. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to.
Absolutely, because it's about the people. It's not about an elected official. It's not about a business. It's about everybody. And
so
we're in this together.
So when you talk about it's about the people, the other thing about this, a situation like this, I know prior to this, some people weren't in love with the property. You know, that's fine. It's going to happen. No matter what you do, it's going to happen. You know, but when a situation like this happens, it's not only the Fain family. It's not only Prescott Valley. How many years, because we've been involved, I think our first conversation was in 2020 when Anessa first reached out to me about doing the restaurants out there. Prior to that, when did you actually start the process of, hey, let's do this and really start earnestly working on it, just without getting in too much detail?
Probably in 2020. I mean, there's a we were kicking around. What do we do? Do we do another garden style apartment? Do we, you know, what do we do? And we have a land planner that helps us. And so we're just kicking and we're brainstorming, like on white paper. They call it dream paper. Just what are different ideas? And it probably took, well, 2020 was a year itself, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it took a while to get through all that. But
yeah.
It started to emerge there. And probably in 2021, we had like the notion of, okay, rather than doing 300 apartments on a couple different projects, let's do the density. Let's get the density and create a vibrant downtown, create a unique space, because that's what people want. They want to be able to, not everybody.
Right.
I don't mean to say everybody wants this, but there are people that would love to be able to walk to shop, walk to dine, walk to entertain themselves, and not have to get in a car. And this, so our goal with Legato was to kind of thread a needle, if you will.
Is.
Our goal with Legato is, it's to thread a needle that gives you some of that urban living, but still keep the rural feel of Prescott Valley.
Well, and see, and that's exactly what drew me to the project when Anessa, because I've been in town now 25, 26 years, and we've always talked about it, the consideration, and it was really, I didn't have a draw to go out there. I didn't have a property or reason to, you know, that really spoke to me. And when you brought this idea to us and asked us to be involved, it was like, this makes sense. I love this idea. It's unique. It's, again, it's not urban sprawl, but it allows for housing for an appropriate market segment that we need in our, that needs to be addressed. And we need people that can work in our community. And that's who we need to have there as well as everybody else. And it was really create that unique vibe in a very like condensed area, you know? And so the other thing is, when we talk about people, how many people, because the other thing people don't realize, it's not only your building that was lost, and it wasn't only the firemen and everything else that was put out that night. How many employees or how many people do you feel? Because when I look at my employees, when I say like how many people I affect, like I employ or I support, it's not only my employee, it's my employee and their wife and their son and their daughter. So we figure 1.5 to 2 people per. But what do you think the overall impact economically to, if you can even put a number to it, or amount of people?
Yeah, economically, I don't know. But I can, you bring up like probably the most powerful story I saw that night was two guys walked up to, we're watching the fire, two guys walked up to the edge of the road, and then they grabbed hands and started praying. They were employees. They were showing up for work. And they're like, my job is on fire. And behind us was all these guys in their fluorescent vests, and they're all workers. And some were probably going to work somewhere else, but a lot of them were workers that were supposed to be on site that day. And so thanks for bringing it up, because I don't think a lot of people shine the spotlight on the workers that lost their jobs that day. And there was, I estimate, about 200 workers, trades, that lost their jobs that day that are looking for
immediately.
Work. Immediately. Gone. I mean, your job
indefinitely.
Yes. And they got to go out and find something else. And then that ripples to the companies that employ them. There were companies that were turning away work because the project is like, we got this. We can't take on any more work. And now all of a sudden, they go into Friday, they're busy, they're full, their life is good, they've got a great future, and then Monday they're like, I've got a big hole in my company, my revenue, it's just gone.
Right.
I mean, everything shuts off. It doesn't just slow down, it's stopped. So, I mean, at least 200 trades employees, and then, you know, there's probably 15 or 20 different businesses that are some component of delivering something to it. All of that just stopped overnight.
Yeah.
And so it's big, and it's big in our community because the workers, a lot of them are here. People always say, well, they're just from out of town. No, sometimes they're out of town trades, the company, because they have the expertise, but then they hire local people to help fill the roles. And so there's a balance there, but there's a lot of local people that were impacted by that.
So real quick, do you have any rumors you want to dispel about the future of the property? Or I guess one of the questions I keep getting, I want to make sure, the wood structure is obviously gone, and the concrete structure is still standing. Is the concrete structure going to come down? Is that going to be something that's going to have to happen?
So my guess is yes. Today, after this meeting, I get to go through a very humbling walk. It's not going to be easy with the insurance adjuster, the structural engineers, the core slab who built the concrete structure. But everybody that's looked at it, the steel inside the structure is exposed. The concrete started to melt and pop off.
Right.
So they're like, it's all gone. I'm thinking anything you see standing will have to get demolished, and then we'll have to rebuild it. We're hoping the undergrounds are still good,
right?
That it didn't get so hot underneath. But even the slabs that the wood structures were on, they're post-tension construction. And what that is you frame your slab and you put cables in it, and then they tighten the cables, and then they pour the concrete, and then when you let it all go, the cables kind of pull everything together, and it keeps the slab as one plane, so if there's settling, it doesn't crack.
Right.
It doesn't sink. But the contractor was saying they could hear the cables popping during the fire. It got so hot that it through the concrete, the cables were popping. So I'm guessing all the slabs are gone. Everything.
Wow. Well...
So it's going to be a clean site again.
Yes.
So it's all about attitude.
Right.
And
I agree with you.
Somebody put a note on my desk, a dear fan, and it just said, you can't do you can't do anything about what's happened in the past, and you can't do anything about what people say about you, but your attitude in it is everything.
Right.
And so our attitude in the company is, let's have a little pep in our step. This sucks. We're not going to ignore it.
Yeah, it does suck.
If you need a hug, if you need a cry, go do it. It's fine. But our attitude is, let's keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Let's plan the future. Let's see how we get Legato back up.
So there's a plan to rebuild.
We're working through that right now.
Okay.
Like I said, we're a go until we find something that says we're a no.
No, because I know we're meeting tomorrow afternoon.
We are.
And we're going to discuss our involvement. Ooh. I mean, I'm still excited about the project. So excited about the project.
That's great.
I, like you, I'm as disappointed as anybody. Obviously, I don't have the loss that you're feeling, and have had to deal with. But I think that I'm confident that when this is all finished and all comes through, that you yourself, your family, your company, and Prescott Valley will be stronger because of it. Because I think it's going to show resilience that I don't believe people expect.
I agree. I totally agree. And that text you sent me, it means a lot. It's just little words like that where people are like, hey, this sucks, but I'm all in. Let's keep going forward. That's what you need in the community of people to say, okay, this, however you look at it, and there's lots of people. We've watched them walk up to the fence and look at it, and they're just like,
yeah.
I mean, and they had nothing to do with it.
Right.
They're just, that's a community member going, this is really bad. This sucks for our community. And it does. So it touches everybody in the community, and if we can all just have that pep in our step and have a good attitude, we're going to find a way through it, and we're going to see Legato back.
I'm going to get you some letterhead that says pep in your step.
Yeah, you walk down the hallway with a little pep in your step.
I like that. Well, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate all the opportunities. I appreciate what you and your family have done for the community and continue to do. Tell Don I said hello. Tell Ron hello. Tell Nessa I said hello. Tell your mother Nancy I said hello.
I'll make sure.
And everybody. And,
well, thank you. I had like my greatest sous vide recipe. I thought, well, I'm talking to Barry. This is going to be about food.
No.
We're going to talk about sous vide.
No. I didn't like sous vide. Do you like sous vide?
I use it on certain items.
Oh, really?
Like brisket. Well, I've smoked brisket, and it just turns out dry. I can't quite master it to keep it moist, but if I sous vide it and then I smoke it,
uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll have to have another one on the show, then. I never saw this side of Brad Payne.
Michelle and I are empty nesters now.
Oh, yeah, see, that's
every night is about what are we going to cook, and so we get bored, and so we're like, well, let's try something new, and so we're just always experimenting.
I like that.
Well, dinner for two, and what are we doing tonight? We try to keep it healthy, and...
Well, thanks so much for joining
me. Thank you for having me.
My guest today has been Brad Fain with the Fain Signature Group in Prescott Valley. Be sure to check in my column every Thursday in the Cross the Street section to see who I'm talking with next, and we'll see you next week on The Prescott Palette.
Let Rafter 11 cater your next special event with a selection of our prepared scones, sandwiches, salads, and bruschetta boards. Rafter 11 Wine Cafe is your one-stop shop for any event. Conveniently located at Center Court in the Prescott Valley Entertainment District. Plan an event on our spacious outdoor patio, in our relaxing dining room, or order ahead for pickup. Rafter 11 Wine Cafe, Coffee Shop, and now your party place, 928-227-2050.
All you need to move ahead is a college that works with you. Yavapai College has degree and certificate programs that can fast-track you for the job you want with schedule options that work with your busy life. The step you take now can secure your future. Take it. Sometimes a classroom or a learning lab is the best way out of the box. YC has classes and certificates in the most sought-after trades. Visit Yavapai College online at yc.edu/admission to register today.
You've been listening to the Prescott Palette on KQNA 1130 AM every Saturday at 12 noon. If you know someone who's doing great things, have a special event, or just got a great story, drop me a line at presspalette@gmail.com. That's P-R-E-S, palette@gmail.com, and we'll get them on the air. In the meantime, see who I'm talking to every Thursday in the Across the Street section of the Daily Courier and on Facebook at Prescott Palette.